Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. If you're not familiar with my show, you can head over to my show blog, which is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. I've been doing the show for quite some time now and have a big variety of guests, and I'm very excited about today's guest. Joining me is Dr. Professor Jason Schiffman, who's a professor right here at UCI. And Dr. Schiffman is professor of clinical science and the inaugural director of clinical training for UCI's clinical psychology program. He received his PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Southern California in 2003. And Dr. Schiffman is founder and past co-director of the Maryland Early Intervention Program's Strive for Wellness Clinic. Dr. Schiffman's research seeks to refine the identification of young people at risk for psychotic disorders, better understand the effects of psychosocial interventions for adolescents with psychosis, and uncover mechanisms that can reduce stigma against people with serious mental health concerns. He is joining us right now. Good morning, Dr. Schiffman.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So this is long overdue. I met you a couple years ago, and so I'm very excited to have you on, especially post-pandemic. And I'm sure you've seen or heard different things going on campus, but before we get into that, tell us how long you've been at UCI.
Well, I've been here about 3.5 years or so, and I actually moved to Irvine right at the height of the pandemic, so it was November of 2020. I remember taking a road trip across the country during, you know, the worst of the quarantining and the like, and just sort of seeing the devastation that the pandemic was having on the nation. It was pretty stark, but I was happy to arrive here and found a warm and inviting community where people were banding together to come together to you know, reinvigorate and to sort of bring meaning and purpose to each other's lives.
Yes. And where did you come from? Was it Maryland?
Yeah. I was at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Okay.
I was there for about 11 years or so, and before that I was at the University of Hawaii, where I was a professor for 6 years.
That sounds like a rough place to live.
I tell you, it's only second to living in Irvine, but it was an amazing home there in Hawaii.
I bet. Where is it exactly? Is it in Kauai, Maui? Where is it?
University of Hawaii is actually on the island of Oahu.
Okay.
In the area known as it's very close to Waikiki.
Okay. Sounds amazing.
Manoa, it's in the Manoa Valley, and it was a really great place. It still is.
Incredible. So tell us about your role here.
Well, I came here in large part to build a clinical psychology program within the Department of Psychological Science. So the Department of Psychological Science for years has been known as an innovator and a leader in psychology, and also the intersection of psychology and the community, working actively, not just from like a academic ivory tower perspective, but rather to take science and apply that to real world problems, so that science can drive solutions. So remarkably, despite this effort, the department didn't have a clinical psychology program, which is a perfect fit for that kind of mentality.
Yes.
You know, this idea that we can work collaboratively with the community to solve problems. And as you know, there's certainly a wealth of evidence to suggest that the mental health crisis that we're all living in is only getting worse.
Right.
So having mental health professionals who are clinical psychologists who can become leaders, not just in helping to fill the gap with respect to number of providers relative to number of folks that need providers, but filling the gap in terms of new ideas and innovations and ways in which we can sort of alleviate some of the challenges from a systems level, where our graduate students don't just learn to be clinicians, although they become the most evidence-based and equipped clinicians in the country, but also to be innovators and leaders in the mental health workspace.
That's great. So you touched on a topic that's very close to the work I do and the writing I've done. And I often say that we were already in a mental health crisis prior to the pandemic. And you've probably heard this so many times. COVID exacerbated this crisis. And I refer to it as now we're in a mental health pandemic. So how do you see a way out of this current pandemic?
Oh, Janine, it's such a complicated but important question. And I am happy that, you know, people like yourself are out there trying to find a path for us. It is true that we've always been sort of in a mental health crisis, but the awareness of it has gotten worse and I think has been exacerbated, as you said, by the pandemic. And it hasn't, you know, remitted. Certain things have kind of come back to normal, or towards normal, although everything's been changed. But I think mental health is one of those things that it's like the more we scratch, the deeper the itch. I mean, it just keeps getting worse. And if I were to be sort of forced to come up with solutions, I think the challenges are really systemic, and the systems that are at play here include a variety of different aspects of our society that sort of, I think, contribute to a lack of mental wellness and a lack of well-being. And then there's also like systems that are in place that are designed to help alleviate some of that, you know, those challenges, or at least the symptoms that people are experiencing.
Right.
And those are not built up well. So, you know, if you think about like laws that support the idea of mental health parity, that is to suggest that, you know, as you would, I'm sure, know, that mental health concerns should be treated the same way that physical health concerns are treated with respect to insurance coverage. But, you know, there's been laws on the books for years, but they're just sort of ignored. And, you know, access to mental health care isn't going to change unless laws like these are enforced.
That's
and
right.
Insurance companies and the like are required to honor the, you know, the laws and to treat mental health concerns equivalent to physical health concerns. Because if they don't, then the workforce isn't going to backflow. Aren't going to pursue careers in mental health because they won't be able to obtain gainful employment. They won't be able to survive.
Yes.
So the incentive structure is kind of broken on that side. And so that's sort of my take on some, you know, like what we're doing to band-aid the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the real problem is a variety of other things. If you just, you know, look around and see elements of society that contribute to climates of hate and, you know, disdain and rebuke qualities of kindness and compassion and love.
That's right.
And, you know, this is a bigger issue, but I think, you know, the little things that we do on a day-to-day basis, whether it be, you know, a smile or holding a door open for someone or checking in to see if somebody's okay if they look down, these are the things that I think collectively, at like a large scale, you know, we can all do on our own little part to kind of make the world better, but we, you know, we're sort of inundated with challenges to the metaphoric smile.
You're right.
That, you know, I'm encouraging people to think about.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that. It's so interesting, all the things you're saying, because I've been focusing more really on four things: kindness, compassion, empathy, and connection. And I went to this Gen Z Wellness Summit put on by, I don't know if you've heard of this, but I'm sure you heard of this organization, the UCLA Semmel Institute. They had a Gen Z Summit a couple months ago, and I went. And one of the biggest issues that Gen Z is facing is the feeling of disconnect, so lack of connection. And being back in person has been uncomfortable for a lot of people, especially if you were introverted to begin with, or if you went through something very personal in the pandemic, and a lot of people of all ages unraveled, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. For a small group of folks, the pandemic was somewhat helpful in terms of their mental wellness. And it's been, I mean, it's hard to identify who those, you know, what constitution or what would what constellation of qualities would, you know, sort of contribute to a person doing better in the pandemic. But
yes.
But regardless, you know, the outside the, you know, the post-pandemic issues have been really taxing for those folks who were more introverted,
right.
And then also for folks that were, you know, were not introverted and thrived and flourished in connection and then didn't have that connection for a long time.
Yes.
So there was no, like, there's no real win, right? There's no, like, group of people that's like, oh, okay, well, now I'm better. And then there's young folks who had, like, their formative socialization years and educational years sort of transformed in ways that were at least very different, if not, you know, unhealthy or unhelpful.
Right.
And so, you know, your sort of willingness to pursue ideas that can bring people together and your, you know, you living your values of connection, I think are so important, you know, going to that conference and listening to people talk about their lack of connection and their need for connection. I think, you know, ironically, or maybe not ironically, maybe purposefully,
mm-hmm.
Creates connection.
Yes.
And so, you know, you're a living, breathing example of part of, I think, the solution, because I think you espouse values of, if I caught them all, kindness, empathy, compassion, and connection. And
yes.
It's clear that you're a champion of all of these. And I'm right there with you. I think these are the ways in which we can push forward collectively as a community.
Yes. And all you have to do is test these ideas out on students to see that they're craving this. They really mm-hmm. want these values. And one of the things that really kind of kicked me in the gut at the conference was when a group of students got up. They were doing spoken word poetry, and they talked about what it was like being them, you know, from the drinks at Starbucks that constantly pushed on them, you know, extra sugar and the, you know, think about it, because we have so much caffeine. We run on a caffeinated society, and then that causes anxiety, and then you're constantly on your phone, and you're seeing that the world is imploding, and you're struggling. There are struggles under your own roof, and just sitting there and taking that all in about what it's like to be a Gen Z was very emotional. Yeah.
I can only imagine. I mean, you know, you're framing their expression of art in the context of what seems to me to reflect biological influences, psychological influences, and social influences, mm-hmm. you know, so like this biopsychosocial model. And how beautiful it must have been to hear them talk about this through poetry and
yes.
spoken word, and how powerful, you know, to see these themes sort of brought to life in like passion and expression, you know, with the, like, the caffeine and, like, always needing to be stimulated and,
yeah.
and feeling this pressure to go, go, go and do and do and do and do more. And then, you know, the inundation of potentially, you know, negative or, you know, I don't know, at least challenging images and, you know, self-comparisons and, you know, all these things that you're getting from the social
yeah.
media. Aspects where it could be a tool for good if the social part could actually be social connection, and then you're processing it the way in which you perceive this influence and how you attribute what they're saying to your life,
right?
The psychological translation.
Yes,
I think all of these things are so important to everyone, and Gen Z folks. Not excluded, and then you seeing this at this conference with these, you know, with these folks
powerful.
Sharing and being brave and sharing it. I mean, that must have been really powerful for you,
very
and
powerful.
And also for them.
Yes, well, because think about it. I mean, all the technology—it's just more and more and more—and the apps and the people that set out to create these apps and these phones—they're not thinking about, you know, maybe this will impact people's mental health. You know, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. And I'm going to share a story with you. This is really interesting. I saw an ad for what I thought were highlighters, And I looked closely and I realized that they were actually vaping devices where kids can go to school with these highlighters and they can vape right at their desks or in front of their friends or whatever, and the teachers won't even know because it looks like a yellow highlighter. And I thought, oh, come on. And I looked at the website and they said, oh, really, it's for 21 and up. And I'm thinking, come on. What person in corporate America is sitting there vaping their highlighter at work? Come on. Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No. Oh, that's so pernicious. I mean, you know, these are the things that are, you know, that are just constantly attacking all of us and our, you know, Gen Z and and everyone. But I mean, you know, it's just, that's scary.
But
I mean, I can't say I'm surprised, but you know what, like if you think back to like systems, you know, like what type of system allows for that and encourages that? You know, I mean, I'm all for, you know, free enterprise, but like, you know, couldn't there be other ways to, I don't know, engage young people and to make a profit on something that isn't, you know, this covert act
to
you know, undermine the well-being of our society.
Because think about this, Dr. Schiffman, we don't yet know the long-term effects of the pandemic, and then parents are up against the vaping, the dark side of the web, all these issues that their kids are living in, but we don't yet know the long-term impact of all of this.
Yeah. No, and we probably never will.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you know, and like the pandemic has this unique impact of being like a sort of a pre-post with this big trauma right in the middle. And we just, it's not a controlled, you know, experiment. I mean, we can't go back to where we were before, and it'll be hard to attribute challenges like that young people who are young now will face when they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think we have to keep circling back to some of the principles and values that you espoused. And I'll, you know, I also liked your idea of like testing things out on students.
Yes.
I mean, and I think you were talking about that in the context of connections. It made me think of an event that we hosted in this, I guess it was the beginning of the spring. But it was an idea that I wasn't sure was going to fly because, you know, it's just kind of a silly thing that I was thinking about. But I teach a class within the Department of Psychological Science in the School of Social Ecology called psychosis, which is my area of research and a mental health concern that I'm very passionate about understanding and then potentially addressing. For folks that want a partnership towards potentially a more adaptive and better trajectory long term.
Sure.
But so I teach this class, and I think it's a practical class that teaches about education around psychosis, but it has a component of what I hope will be like an inspiration for students to get involved and to make a difference in their community.
That's
and
great.
And one way to do this is to bring people together, have people come together and educate and attempt to reduce stigma. And one idea that I used to do when I was back in Maryland was I hosted flash mobs organized flash mobs where I would bring people together and we'd all dance in like a public square, and then we would have like a discussion about mental health. I'd usually have like folks come in and talk about their mental health journeys and their recovery and the sources of strength in their lives and the challenges that they overcame and the like. And I wasn't sure if I could pull it off here post pandemic or how it would fly at UCI, but we gave it a whirl. And to your point about like sort of testing it out.
Yeah.
It was just such a joyous experience. We had over 100 people participate. My daughter choreographed it. She's only she's still in high school. So
it's great.
But she came over and she made a video, and then everybody practiced the video from the class, and then she led the the dance, and people just seemed so
joyous
in the moment, you
yes.
know, like very present. And the idea was that we were in this case, we were raising awareness for mental health concerns and encouraging folks who happened to be walking by when we were dancing mm-hmm. to come in and join us for our class as we were screening the final project videos, which were these like 3-minute sort of public service announcements that the students had developed as their class finale project.
Okay.
And so we got to watch these educational videos with folks who were just walking by or who participated in the dance. I don't know how many folks came, but it was like a time when we all came together for, I think, a greater purpose.
Yes.
And, you know, where there was some rationale, some motivation, some reason for what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all stronger together as a result.
Definitely. Do you see yourself repeating this? You should do this again.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. And I had so much buy-in and enthusiasm for it that I can't imagine not doing it again.
That's
so
fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'll be sure to let you know in advance.
Please
next
do.
Time. It would be great to have you.
Was it on Instagram? I thought I saw some video.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was in the School of Sociology, I think, posted a little clip
Instagram.
On
Instagram. Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
I will say this. I've noticed that when students or even adults get involved in purpose-driven initiatives, it takes them away from whatever it is they're struggling with. And it could be, you know, picking up excess food and donating it to a food bank or just doing something on campus that's an act of kindness is so essential. How do you think students can, who are struggling, what can they do as far as resources on campus to help them?
Well, certainly, I mean, in terms of the external resources, you know, the first and foremost for students, you know, seek help from the Counseling Center.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shame or stigma that should be attached with a walk over to the Counseling Center. They're well equipped and you know, are replete with great therapists who I think have actively helped buoy the mental health of our community. I think that's your number one tool for, especially for folks that are, you know, really struggling. But then I think I might recommend like a theme that's sort of similar to what you just described, which
mm-hmm.
is like, you know, trying to find ways to have purposeful, value-driven activities within your life. You know, I there's so many opportunities to get involved at UCI. And I think, you know, some folks are you know, like, oh, well, I really need to make sure my studies don't, you know, suffer. And so all I can do is study. But I think there's a reasonable amount of literature and evidence to suggest that student involvement, up until a point, is actually highly correlated with academic success.
Definitely.
So, you know, getting involved in other things besides your classes, I think is really a good thing to think about. Now, like more philosophically,
yes,
I like to think of this idea of following your passion
mm-hmm.
as something that I think students can think about and like plant a seed in the back of their minds. Now, when I give this advice, I found that, you know, the idea is good. Everyone's heard this, you know, like follow your passions, but it really needs to be unpacked a bit. You know, the concept of passion is very dynamic. You know, your passions can change. They may wax and wane. There may be times in one's life where they're not sure what their passions are.
Right.
So for this, I recommend that students think about actions that satisfy three conditions. And if you find yourself in these, like living a life satisfying these three conditions, then I think it's a good proxy for following your passion. In other words, you could think like, okay, I'm on the right track.
Okay.
And these three things include doing things that you like, mm-hmm. that are fun for you, that you enjoy, that when you're doing it, like the time kind of just flies by. The second condition or tenet of my thoughts around this are doing things that you're good at, where you have some efficacy, some skill, where people are like, wow, you're really, you know, crushing that. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You're sort of in your element. And then the third condition is doing things that matter or connect you with others, that make a difference.
Yes.
And this really speaks to what you and I have been talking about at, mm-hmm. at some level. And so these opportunities that you engage in, that are fun for you, that you enjoy, that you have efficacy or skill around, and that connect you and make the world maybe better in some small or large way, that matter. I think if you're in this intersection, then I contend you will be living a life of contentment, of satisfaction, a life of meaning.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I'm not going to say like a life of happiness, because I think that life has ups and downs. Happiness is a part of that.
Yes.
But really you want a life that's fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And being in that intersection, I think is important. And I think UCI has so many different opportunities outside of the classroom for students to engage in
yes.
these things, and do so through the vision of kindness and empathy and compassion, all towards the service of connecting with others.
I love that.
To improve the world.
I love that. I, touching on what you said, you spoke at the Black Psychology Student Association event on Saturday, and I didn't get to see you there, but I led a workshop called How Are You Really? And one of the things I talk about is the power of creating a nonlinear life, because life is nonlinear. And if you're lucky, it's very nonlinear. So you know, you get this dream job and then unfortunately you lose your dream job. But if you're open, right, to different people mm-hmm. and things, and I had all kinds of ridiculous summer jobs at one point, from painting houses to all kinds of things, it just opens you up to new people, new experiences. It makes you resilient. It makes you a lifelong learner. And you do discover, sometimes you do things that are not paying, but you're volunteering, and it gives you meaning and connection and balance. And lastly, I will say this. I ask students, what's the point of college? Because it's not just to get a degree, right? It's to learn how to take care of yourself and be open and meet new people and grow and find out who you are and what you like. And it's not just about, you know, academics, as far as I'm mm-hmm. concerned. Wouldn't you agree?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And, you know, I'll take your first comments about the nonlinearity of life and mm-hmm. of progress. You know, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. And embedded in that model of nonlinearity, in other words, that, like, not everything is on this, like, perfect slope of improvement or goodness or happiness or whatever. Understanding that that's the way the world works not only, like, helps you get to where you're going, but it protects you from in those lower times.
Right.
So that you can, you know, you can, like, take a step back in a, like, a moment of despair and just say, life is not linear.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to last forever.
Yes.
And then I like to, like, encourage people to think back, okay, you know, this is your rating where you're at now, and it's pretty low. Let's say it's in a dip on the nonlinearity.
Mm-hmm.
Take a moment and look back, or to try to reflect on where you started. And I bet it's even lower, you know, in this journey of yours. So yes, it's not as high as it once was, but it's not as low as it once was either. And you know that the slope is upwards, even if the line isn't completely straight. So it can protect you in both directions, I think. And then, you know, to your point about the point of college and really the point of life, I mean, I think a big part of the meaning of life is around learning and self-growth.
Mm-hmm.
And you get so much more learning and growth outside of the classroom than you do inside of the classroom, from my perspective. I mean, I'm on record as saying that students will learn far more from one another than they will from any individual professor or teacher that they have
yes.
in their careers. And that's no, you know, that's no disparagement towards myself or my profession, but rather a true honoring of the value of connection and of growth that students have when they come together.
Definitely. So unfortunately we have to wrap up, and I've loved having you on the show. This was great.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much. And I mean, thank you for all that you're doing and your consistency in doing it. You know, I've worked with a lot of students who have worked with you, been your interns, who have always told me about all of you, like, of how you live your values day in and day out. with them and inspire them to push on and to make the world better, to follow their passions, to do the things that they like, that they're good at and that matter and make a difference. And it's a real honor to talk to you and to have
you
give me a few minutes of your wisdom. So thank you.
Oh, this is great. So I want to just ask you to tell students or anyone else listening where they can find you and learn more about you.
Well, that's a good question. So you could check the Department of Psychological Science webpage. And my program of research, we have our lab name is the LEAPS Lab, and you can access opportunities to get involved through my lab there, or you can email me at my first and last name separated by a period in the middle, jason.schiffman@uci.edu.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, and stand by. Don't hang up.
Okay, you got it. Thanks.
If you missed any part of my conversation with Dr. Jason Schiffman, it'll be up within an hour after I wrap as a podcast. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.